Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by just say your names and your I guess who you play in the show.
Hi, this is Chris Boson. I'm the dude.
And this is Lou Byard. I play Jackie Treehorn.
In the Big Lebowski experience, it's the fifth time doing it, so congrats. It's coming to back to Pearl Street Warehouse this Saturday, April 20th. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Glad
Jason.
To be here again. Thank
All right,
you.
So we talked last year because I guess it was the 25th anniversary of the Coen Brothers movie, but this year we have another excuse to talk to you because you all are celebrating an anniversary. So tell me about, I guess, can you believe it's been 5 years, and and why is this a big deal to celebrate, the fifth anniversary?
Well, it's exciting. When we started this, it was just a fun little project among friends. We thought it would be a laugh. Nobody would get the joke. But it turns out there's such a huge community of folks that really love the movie and love the characters and created a religion around it, that it just turns into this sort of festival-like atmosphere with people in costumes. And it's just sort of strange and exciting to be in the center of all that as the dude.
Awesome. And so remind us how I think we talked about it last time, in case they missed last year's interview, remind us how it started to begin with. Like, how did you decide? I mean, obviously we're all fans of the movie, but how did you decide to do like a band version of it?
There was a musician that actually that Lou and I both played with, who one night when we were sitting around, he was noodling on a guitar, and he played the Kenny Rogers song that's in the soundtrack. And we got a laugh out of that because I looked at him and I said, you kind of look like the stranger. And he looked at me and says, yeah, well, you look like the dude. And that's where it all started from. And we found some of the musical friends, and Lou, I think he's more as a Jackie Treehorn than anybody else we could have found. He has that sort of regal demeanor and he's very cool, but you're also a little suspicious of him. You don't really know what his motives are.
Shady. I'm also the only one with gray hair currently in the cast. That's my main qualification.
So it came together naturally.
So Chris just raved about why you're the best Jackie Treehorn. So Lou, dote on why Chris is the perfect dude. Well, people can't see this interview, but
that's the problem.
I mean, you kind of look like it.
See him.
Describe
to
it. Describe it, yeah. For the visually paint a picture for the radio.
Okay, he's got this long head of shaggy, sort of auburnish hair. He's now. Are you gonna keep the beard too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gray as it is.
Love it.
No, but you have to understand, for years, Chris has been stopped by people in the street who say, you know who you look like? And he's like, yeah, I know. And he's looked like the dude for a long time. So this is a mating that was bound to happen. It was made in heaven, bringing these two together.
And it's become a bit of like an alter ego for you beyond just these shows, right? Didn't you officiate a wedding as the dude in Camden Yards or something? Remind us what happened with that.
I did. I've done a couple of weddings now as the dude. I am certified dudist priest. There is actually an institution called the Church of the Latter-day Dude. I did a ceremony for some baseball fans at Camden Yards. I did another one at some friend's house in the backyard, and people who are fans appreciate it. And I mean, it's a joke, but when you're doing something like that, you try to be serious. And the ritual that I do, I'll wear the sweater and I'll have some quotes from the movie, but I also try to take it serious. I mean, these are people getting married. They may be fans of the movie, but they still deserve a good wedding, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, so
do they pay you, Chris? Do they pay you for this privilege? Do you get
that time I got to go to the ballpark for free. I would take that. That was good.
Well, yeah.
There's no free fee structure for dudes.
Yeah. Well, so we can single-handedly thank you and the dude for the Orioles resurgence to playoff caliber baseball. There's a new owner now. They renewed the stadium lease. I think that's all the dudism.
It totally is.
Yeah. Yeah. that's just like your opinion, man.
Just your homework, Larry. I like pee myself laughing. Think that John Goodman scene is so effing hilarious. Oh, and the Folgers, yeah. Can, all of it. We could go all day, but all right, bring it back on track to the actual concert. You mentioned the Kenny Rogers song. I guess at that time it was the first edition, right? Just dropped into
yes.
Condition. My condition is in. So, I can't use it if I say it. So, tell us the song. Some of the song titles from the movie. Is it Bob Dylan, Man? I mean, like, what do we hear when we come?
Well, there's a lot of different stuff. I mean, obviously the songs everybody knows, that Bob Dylan, the the Kenny in the first edition, of course, for the dream sequence. But there's other stuff that's not quite rock and roll. There's some sort of proto punk with the Monks. And then you get into some very jazzy stuff with Nina Simone and 50s Exotica with Ema Sumac. It's a huge variety of music. So the stuff that people know and they sing along with is the Creedence. And of course, that plays a big role in the movie. And we also do some Eagles, which is difficult for me because I hate the Eagles, man.
The dude hates the Eagles.
No, the we dude do it anyway. The I love him. The Eagles, but the dude hates
we do
the
it
Eagles.
Despite him. Yeah. We do a couple of, we do Hotel California and Peaceful Easy Feeling. Yeah.
Now, do you do it like the Gypsy King cover of Hotel
yes,
California?
Yes. Yeah. We do that arrangement. Our singer, Joan, sings the lyrics in Spanish. And we, you know, everybody gets into it. The whole cast, if you will, it's everybody's in costume, but also in character. So while we're playing the music, we're also doing bits from the film. And the highlight is usually the costume contest, because I bet, I don't know, a third or a half the people come to the show in costume. As I said, it's that festival atmosphere. They're excited. And last year, I think the costume contest was won by a guy dressed as a rug.
Oh, he really tied the room together.
He was dressed, he tied the room together for sure. That's true. I should add too that we can say this about them because we're just, you know, we're just singing and whatever, but this is some of the best musicians in the DMV area. These are extraordinary players. So even if you don't want to dress up and do the cosplay, you can come enjoy a really great show.
So you're saying, so obviously you're inviting everyone to cosplay in the audience to come dress as their favorite, you know, characters from Big Lebowski. But tell us the band members on stage that you're talking about, which all characters, you know what I mean? Do we have a dude? Do we have the Jesus? Do we, you know what I mean?
Well, our musical director is Chris Brown, who's a great bass player. He's in Moonshine Society. He's played with all kinds of great folks around here. He is the Jesus, and he's in the full purple costume and the hairnet.
No one F's with Joan, him, though. No one F's with him.
No one does. And once you see him, you know, you nobody does. Joan Bishop, and I love working with Joan. She's a great singer, but she also made her own costume as Maude from the dream sequence. So she has, you know, the trident and the helmets on the horn.
The full Valkyrie look, yeah.
The Julianne Moore, but just in the dream sequence.
Yes.
Crazy outfit. Okay.
Yeah. And then Ben Tufts, who's a very well-known drummer in the area, great drummer. He's Walter for us. And we also have somebody who's a great musician, Dan Riggs, who also does a dancing bit. He's the landlord. So if you know the landlord and you know the dance, he does the full cycle.
That's awesome. Now, you said Walter. So it's like the whatever the John Goodman. What is it like? Not fatigues. What is it like a vest or something? I can't remember what.
Ammo.
Yeah. Camo.
Yeah.
And you said he's the drummer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's got to be very rigid. You know, it's not nom. There are rules, and he's got to keep the time. And as long as he's doing it, we feel good. You need to have that as your Walter to keep things moving forward according to a plan.
Now, dude, if you ever step like just past the stage, does he ever yell, "Over the line"?
Oh, we need to add that, Jason.
You should add it.
We definitely need to add that.
So you guys some of the are musicians, out of your element some, yeah. here. So
yeah, we are.
Some of the musicians have been known to come up the stage and walk through the crowd too. So there's an interactive piece of it as well.
And you I want to pretend I'm not here for a second, reach through the radio and tell our listeners to dress up. Because it can't just be the people on the stage. We're going for the whole Pearl Street Warehouse is gonna be like the dream sequence.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. It's so fun to interact with people because I'll come off the stage as the dude and there'll be three guys dressed as the dude and we'll share a big hug and we'll all get a Caucasian into a drink or maybe an oat soda. And then, you know, it's so much fun to interact with people who are also in character, even if it's just for a moment. We'll do a little bit from the film and we'll all have a good laugh. But the costumes get really creative, too, which makes it fascinating. Sometimes you've got to guess. One time somebody showed up in Lederhosen. And we had to figure out why is he here in Lederhosen? And it goes back to that scene with Walter and the car when he starts yelling, he's bashing the car with a golf club. Yeah. Because when they edited that for TV, his phrase, which I'll say, which hopefully won't make it on the radio, this is what you get when you fuck a stranger in the ass. What he says when he's bashing the car with a golf club is, this is what you get when you find a stranger in the Alps.
Whoa!
So somebody showed up.
Okay. Suddenly it's
in the Alps.
Suddenly it's an Oktoberfest line. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So come as anything
in the interaction.
Yeah, I love it.
Ziggy, 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 dude, dude, dude. All right, so
Jason, you know this movie very well, my friend.
But
you know
that was just me quoting Oktoberfest mixed with the movie. But yeah. I don't know if man, I really. It's so hard to pick a favorite Coen Brothers movie. I mean, I love Fargo. We actually just had William H. Macy on the other day because he screened Fargo. Yeah, we had Jerry Lundegaard because he came to Warner Theater in D.C. and screened the movie. It was amazing. But would you? It's either that or No Country, of course, for like thrills. My wife and I love Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? There's Raising Arizona, and there's so many. But for you guys, where does Lebowski? Do you have it at the top? I mean, it could be. It's hard to pick.
I do, and it's not just a requirement because I'm the dude. For me, it's always been right there, and I'm from Albuquerque. So Raising Arizona strikes close to home. My brother lived in suburban Tempe, although not in a trailer. But yeah, this is the movie, and it has the most in it. All their stuff is chock full of references, and even in Lebowski, you've got biblical references. You've got all kinds of great things. And yeah, I'd say it's probably my favorite, but there are 5 or 10 Coen Brother movies that I just think are outstanding films.
Masterpiece.
I was a Blood Simple guy. I like I like a kind of straight noir. I love their very first movie. And the thing about Lebowski, it was tough for me at first because it's a noir that just doesn't want to solve itself. It's a mystery that won't get solved, and it keeps spreading.
Like The Big Sleep, the first time you watched
that. Exactly,
actually, the 10th
exactly.
time you watched it, you're like, I love Bogey. Yeah. All right, I love Howard Hawks, but this doesn't really tie together, but I still love it.
Yeah. I mean, you're more confused at the end of the movie than you are at the beginning. Yeah, and it's okay. So it took me a while to warm to it. But now, of course, I think they were ahead of their time in some ways with that movie. And now people are still catching up to it. And it has definitely a huge cult out there. But it is a cult. I mean, there are people who are not going to ever be able to warm to this movie because it's just so weird. It's so weird.
It might be one of those most wonderfully weird movies ever. Because you're not, Lou, you're not the only one that felt that way. I'm sure most people the first time they saw it were like perplexed by it, but they could tell something was special about it, but they couldn't quite put their finger on it. And it did. You're right. It developed a cult. Didn't people go like Rocky Horror? Like they dressed up for the midnight screenings and
Same idea. Mm-hmm. Same idea. Yeah. And those are the ones that people feel most passionate about. They're these little, you know, I guess it's not a little movie anymore, but the ones that don't necessarily get the attention right out of the gate.
So maybe they some of those folks already have the costumes from those midnight showings and they can just wear them, you know, just dust it off next to the Lederhosen.
I keep seeing the same Jackie Treehorn every year. He keeps coming back, coming back for more. So
Do you just keep the outfit in the closet and for once a year, or do you ever bust it out for like a random set?
Why would you ever bust it out for if it wasn't for Lebowski? Oh my God.
I do. I mean, I don't go around in the white coveralls, but I do wear the sweater. It's a great sweater.
Officiating weddings, man. You wear it all the time.
Yeah.
I think he looks good as... I think Lou should wear that costume. I think it would be great.
It sort of has
it
has kind of a disco look to it. It feels like something John Travolta might have rejected for Saturday Night Fever. It has that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, I don't know if people would want Jackie Treehorn officiating their wedding. The dude is like, that'd be a little wild.
Well, he's a pornographer too. There's that issue.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if that works quite as well. well, awesome. I mean, well, what else do we want to say about the? I think we covered the show itself pretty well. How about just backstory on both of you? If you know, I know if they missed last time. Chris, tell us sort of where you grew up, and then we'll come to Lou.
Came to DC from Albuquerque in 1989, started playing in bands at that time. It was still some punk music, which was great, and psychedelic. And I, you know, had the day job, spent some time on the Hill, and then rediscovered music in a serious way, started Pre-Lobster Buffet, started doing some jazz with Lou. And it's really been a great part of, you know, I thought you had to give up music when you became a real adult and had a job. And what I've learned is it's actually the only way to stay sane enough to keep that job is to do this kind of stuff.
And then Lou, people might know your name from your books, and they've even been adapted for the screen.
Yeah, that's true. One of my books, The Pale Blue Eye, was made into a Netflix movie with Christian Bale and Robert Duvall and people like that. So that was pretty great. Now, I should say I was born in Albuquerque, but I grew up in Northern Virginia, Springfield. I went to West Springfield High. So I'm a local boy. And my day job is as a writer, as a novelist, and writing other things. But as Chris said, the music just makes everything fun again in a way that adult life doesn't always permit. So it's really great to hang out with these cool cats.
I love you. Both took a wrong turn in Albuquerque and came.
I took out of Albuquerque and he took it in.
Came to DC. I love it. No, I love it. Everyone check out The Pale Blue Eye as well. That's cool. And it was like a, it's like an Edgar Allan Poe. You riffed on that, and that spoke to me because I one time wrote a screenplay, but it never got made. About a Charles Dickens, like it was like Seven, but meets Charles. Like the
Ooh.
people were getting killed in the style of different, you know, Dickensian
Oh, wow.
inequalities. You know what I mean? So.
I did a Dickens one too. I read a book called Mr. Timothy about Tiny Tim as a grown man in Victorian London. Also very dark.
Yeah, I knew I liked
Sure.
you
I
guys.
love that.
We're
Yeah.
on the same wavelength here. I love it.
Right? We're all twisted and
Yeah.
dark. And yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
awesome.
Pale Blue Eye is an amazing book. If you haven't read it, you should get it. It's I that's I'm I feel really lucky to get to play with Lou and hang out with Lou and mostly his dog, but he's, you know, those books he writes are spectacular.
He loves my dog and vice versa.
Yeah, well, you know, he writes something big for Christian Bale and now for Chris Boson. So there you go.
Bosun, right?
It's
I
always
mean,
two
it's a
Chris.
natural, it's a
We're pretty
natural
much the
progression.
same.
It's the
Yeah,
Crispy.
we're
Come
basically
see
the same guy.
one of
The
those
crispy,
Crispies.
crispy. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I mean, I could riff with you guys all day, but let me close out with the tease here. What's the date again? Oh yeah. All right. Duh. 420. A big day, symbolically for Big Lebowski fans. It's called The Big Lebowski Experience, number 5, this Saturday. Everybody, get your tickets now for Pearl Street Warehouse. Hey, thanks for doing this. This is fun. Every year fun.
Thanks, Jason. I will take care.
Thanks.
Later.